Owen, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Gerard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Montez Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Brzezinski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Berger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, President Courtney.
A quorum being present, we will now post the colors, and Senator Berger will lead us in our Pledge of Allegiance. Allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic which stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The invocation today is by Pastor Daniel Lopez, here from Salem.
Soberano Dios, Creador del cielo y de la tierra, el salmista David decía que de mañana tú oías su voz. Por eso, Señor, en esta mañana vengo para darte las gracias por este maravilloso día e invoco tu presencia sobre este lugar y sobre cada uno de los que están en este lugar también. Gracias, Dios, por la oportunidad que nos das de estar en este lugar. Ruego, Señor, tu bendición y tu luz sobre cada uno de nuestros legisladores de este bello estado de Oregón. Y ruego que alces la luz de tu rostro sobre cada uno de ellos. Que tu sabiduría y que tu divina gracia, Señor, sea sobre ellos. La responsabilidad que tienen es enorme, pero bajo la guianza de tu Espíritu Santo y tu poder, ellos seguirán haciendo y seguirán haciendo, Señor, un enorme trabajo en este lugar. Yo ruego por cada uno de ellos y los pongo en tus manos. Esta mañana, Señor, tu bendición sea sobre cada uno de ellos en el nombre de Jesús. Amén.
Thank you, Pastor Daniel Lopez. And now we have a special performance, my fellow senators. I'd like to have your attention, because if you don't give me your attention, the person who's going to be specially performing will have something to say about it and demand your attention. The incomparable Senator Margaret. It's either Catherine or Louise Carter. Which one?
Okay, you guys can sit down. I just thought maybe I would sing a song for us this morning. Go ahead, drive the nails in my hand. You can laugh at me where you stand. Go ahead and say it isn't me. The day will come when you will see. Go ahead, mock my name. My love for you is still the same. 'Cause we'll rise again. Ain't no power on earth can tie me down. Yes, I'll rise again. Death can't keep me in the ground. Go ahead, 'cause I'll come again. But you will see when you can. You just go ahead. Try to hide the sun, but all will see that he's the one. 'Cause he'll come again. Ain't no power on earth can keep him back. Yes, we'll come again. Come to take our people back.
I always like it when Senator Carter sings for us. I always like it. Courtesy to the Senate. Remonstrances. Message from the House.
Mr. President.
Excuse me. Senator Larry George, for what purpose do you rise?
Remonstrances, Mr. President.
Without objection, we return to remonstrances.
Mr. President, I put on your desk last night, and then I had put on your desk again this morning, a graph about the total all-funds budget of the state of Oregon. And there's probably nothing more important to me than the fact that we actually start talking in this time of crisis about core functions of our state government. And for nearly three decades now, the state of Oregon has made the decision to break our budget into little chunks and look at them in isolation. We have federal funds, we have lottery funds, we have general funds, and we have other funds. Other states don't do this. Other states look at their budget in total. And I was inspired, many of you may know that Governor Bill Richardson of New Mexico, a Democrat, former presidential candidate for the Democrats, worked in the Clinton administration. When he became governor of the state of New Mexico, he came up with a plan called Core Functions of State Government. And what he said was, is we are going to fund the core functions of state government first and fully before we fund anything else. On the back of the chart, my staff has prepared for you a growth of the state government and how rapidly we have grown state government in total. And that is a burden that people pay. People often say that we are a low-tax state, but we're the sixth highest spending state in the union. How do we do that? It's how we draw our money. The fact is that we're not prioritizing our spending. If you'll look, in the last biennium, we spent $48 billion. This biennium here, without one single tax or fee increase, I believe we're going to spend over $50. And the bottom line is that we have nearly a 5% increase in total funds available to the state legislature. We need to balance our budget within current funds, which is a $2 billion increase in all funds. It's about core functions. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. We now return to the regular order of Senate business. We're under messages from the House.
Mr. President, this briefing has passed. Senate Bill 310, 498, 560, passed following Senate bills amended by the House. Senate Bill 794, 874, 241, 274, 495, 780, 973. Speaker has signed House Bills 2011, 2108, 2153, 2155, 2156, 63, 65, 2205, 2207, 19, 49, 62, 72, 76, 77, 23, 18, 33, 94, 25, 10, 26, 21, 27, 38, 27, 55, HGM 8, 12, 21, HDR 35, 40, 43, SB 72, 104. Speaker has signed House Bills 5030, 31, 2085, 86, 2269, 78, 2304, 2308, 2311, 2353, 60, 2408, 62, 2630, 2753, 2911, 2923, 2956, 2963, 3256, and HJM 20.
Reports from conference committees. Reports from standing committees. In accordance with SR 8.551, committee report summary number 121 was distributed to members today. This information will be called in the journal and status report and so ordered. Reports from special committees. Recognize Senator Devlin, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, Senate Democrats request a 15-minute caucus in their caucus room.
Recognize Senator Ted Ferrioli, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Republicans likewise need a 15-minute caucus, and I urge them with all good speed to go up to the caucus room. Thank you.
The Senate will go into recess until 10:20. The Senate is now in recess.
Senator, please come to order. Clerk, please call the roll.
Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Bonnet-Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Brzozinski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Verger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, President Courtney.
He's here.
A quorum is present. The Senate recessed under the order of reports from special committees and will resume under the proposition of motions as so ordered. Recognize Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I move that House Bill 3405 be taken from the table.
Senator Devlin has moved that House Bill 3405 be taken from its place on the table. Explain to your motion.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. Sine die is imminent. We need to address this measure and the measure that we will consider soon if we are going to meet Oregonians' needs. That's why this motion is being put before you. Call of the Senate.
Senator Devlin has moved for a call of the Senate. He is joined by Senator Lori Montes-Anderson and Senator Rick Metzger. The doorkeepers will bar the doors, and Sergeant of Arms will attend. The clerk will call the roll.
Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Hass, Johnson, Cruz, Cruz, Metzger, Montes Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Morse, Nelson, Przonski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Verger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, President Courtney.
All right, our subject for call, our president, we are now voting. Senator Ferrioli, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, since the Republican caucus had no idea, because we were not told, that this motion would be coming, contrary to the operational procedures throughout the session, none of our members have their bill files on this important measure, Mr. President, so I would request that we take a five-minute recess so members can get their bill files and so that we can proceed in an informed manner on this measure.
Well, we'd have to suspense for the call. Staff can bring them down, but we're under call.
President, then I request we have a recess if members are required to stay on the floor because of the call, but that we do not proceed until our members have had an opportunity to have their staff bring their bill files to the floor.
How much time do you think that's going to take, Senator Ferrioli?
Mr. President, only as much time as it takes for our members to communicate to their staff to pull the files and bring them to the floor. Mr. President, this entire delay could have easily been avoided had the majority leader communicated.
Senator Ferrioli, the motion to, as you know, to take a measure on the table is not debatable. I'm just going to do this. I'm going to say we're going to stand at ease. We are not going to recess. We will stand at ease on the floor under call for, shall we say, a couple, 3 minutes, and see if that doesn't resolve this situation.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. All members are subject to the call, must remain within the bar. Recognize Senator Ted Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I understand there may be another motion involving yet another bill that has been laid upon the table, so that those bill files, if we're to be informed in this debate, also have to be brought to the floor. I believe the bill number is 2649.
So, yes.
Again, Mr. President, it would have been a matter of convenience had we known that these bills were going to be brought off the table today so that our members can arrive prepared to engage in the spirited debate that will inevitably follow. Thank you, Mr. President.
So are they getting prepared now? I mean,
some members have received their files and others are in transit, Mr. President.
Senator Burley, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, request a return to courtesies or courtesies of some sort.
I'll take your request. I don't want to return to anything right now except where we're at. I think I will, if you want to try to say something about, why don't you just say what you want to do and we'll go from there.
Mr. President, we have 100 third graders from Charles F. Tigard Elementary School up here in the gallery, and I wanted to welcome them for this very important debate we are about to have, and to ask that courtesies be extended to them.
Thank you. Well, I hope you have a good day here. We're glad that all the students could come. It's your state capitol, and I'd like to extend the official courtesies of the Senate to you. Thank you. Recognize Senator Carter.
Thank you, Mr. President. What I'd like to do is introduce a person that is sitting at my desk with me. She just left from being a member of the Missouri Assembly, Ms. Juanita Watkins, and she has now moved from Missouri to Oregon. So please welcome her to the State Senate. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's an honor and privilege to have you here in the state of Oregon. And Missouri is a great state. Oregon's a great state. We're glad that together today in your person, I'd like to extend the official courtesy to the Senate to you. Thank you very much. Honor and privilege you join us, Your Honor. Stay down. Senator Ferry, early, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I appreciate the courtesy that the President has shown to our members. We have had sufficient time to bring bill files to the members' desks. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. We're under call. There is a motion on the floor. It is not debatable. That motion is that House Bill 3405 be taken from the table, which means if the motion passes, we will debate and vote on the House Bill 3405. All those in favor of taking House Bill 3405 off the table, please say aye as their names are called. All those opposed, no. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Burdick. Carter. Carter.
Carter.
Who?
Carter.
Devlin.
Aye.
Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. Gerard. Hass. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Montenerson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Brzezinski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Verger. Walker. President Courtney.
Yes.
Absent. Atkinson. Voting no. Boquist. Ferrioli. George. Gerard. Cruz. Morse. Starr. 22 ayes.
The motion is carried. House Bill 3405 is now before the Senate for consideration under third readings. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 3405, relating to state finance, appropriating money, prescribing effective date, and providing for revenue raising requires approval by 3/5 majority.
Recognize Senator Jenny Burdick.
Thank you, Mr. President. I will be very brief in my comments on House Bill 3405 because, as we all know, it is unchanged from the bill we debated at length yesterday. I just want to remind us all that this bill will help us get out of this legislative session after making $2 billion in cuts. This bill will permit us to minimize the cuts in schools, the cuts in services to vulnerable citizens, and the cuts in programs that keep our state moving and growing. This is part of a balanced approach to get through a legislative session in the toughest economic times I can recall in my lifetime, and probably that applies to most people here. It's been a tremendous challenge. This is part of the balanced approach to get us out of here and still have the services that Oregonians need, want, and deserve, and I urge an aye vote.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Larry George.
Thank you, Mr. President. On your desk, this morning, and I discussed it during remonstrances, put this chart on your desk. And I want to remind everybody exactly what we're talking about here. I gave you the history from 1941 till this biennium of the growth of state government. And people keep talking about the fact that we have some kind of deficit. But under any math that I can possibly calculate, we are going to go in all funds budgets from $48 billion to $50 billion. Now, I've done this math about six or seven different ways, and the best thing I can figure out is that there's some kind of information vortex that exists here at the Capitol that sucks normal math and takes it away. Because from my perspective, going from $48 billion to $50 billion of money in this building is a 4 to 5% increase in total funds available in this state. The only way you can possibly come up with a cut is if you dice up our budget left and right and say these funds are separate, these funds are separate. But the fact is that we, the Oregon legislature, have 5% more money this biennium than we do the biennium that we're concluding. And yet our turn is to go out to businesses who have clearly been suffering, clearly been laying people off, and say, we need even $1 billion more from you. This is available for anybody in the media or anybody on the floor from my office, and it will show you that we actually have 4 to 5% more money in this building than we did before and without taxes. Before this motion was moved forward, I was going to move that we pull Senate Bill 602 to the floor, which is the core functions budget process. where we as a legislature start looking at our spending and start identifying what are the core functions of our state government, and we fund those first and fully. But apparently, the fact that this is back on the floor, we're back to business as usual, which is we are going to continue to spend and spend and spend, even though we have more money, and we're going to turn to businesses, and we're going to turn to employers, and we're going to turn to individuals and say, you know what? We don't want to stop spending. We have 5% more money now, and what we're going to do is we're going to ask for even $1 billion more. How is that fair? How is that smart? How is that good public policy? I ask you to look at the rate of growth. You all know that I entered the building in 1987 as a staffer for State Representative Liz Van Leeuwen. And I remember when I became a lobbyist in about 1991, the all funds budget of this state was $14.1 billion. And I do not feel like I'm that old, but in the past 18 years, our budget has gone from $14.1 billion to now going to be $50 billion. And somehow, even though the private sector has come up with some $40 billion more, $30 billion, $35 billion more for us, we still think they ought to come up with $1 billion more today. I mean, at some point, we need to quit playing legislative math and start looking at the reality that we're spending more money every single time. And while businesses are slashing payrolls, and while businesses are holding flatline their expenses, and while businesses are pulling back, without a single tax increase, we have $2 billion more. There has to be some type of budget reform in this building. I don't care if it's core functions budgeting. I don't care if it's zero-based budgeting. But we cannot continue to have this ridiculous debate that government has some kind of natural right to continue to grow at whatever rate it wants to. So if we ask for a $6 billion increase and we only get a $2 billion increase, that somehow that's a $4 billion cut. Because that doesn't make any sense to me. I asked an honor student class from Kaiser High School to do this math with me, and I ran the same thing through them. I said, how many of you have heard that there's a $4 billion cut in the state budget? And they all raised their hands. Apparently they've read the media too. Because on the front page of all of the papers, it says a $4 billion cut. So I asked them, if you had $48 billion, and now you got $50 billion, how does that make a $4 billion cut? The fact is it doesn't. The only place it happens is right here in this building. And to think that we are going to take a 4 to 5% increase in total spending and then ask businesses in this state to raise another $1 billion is irresponsible and needs to be addressed, and this measure should go down. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Brian Boquist yielded his time. Recognize Senator Ted Farrioli.
Thank you, Mr. President. Will the carrier yield to a question?
Will the carrier yield?
Happy to, Mr. President.
Carrier will yield.
Mr. President, does the bill contain a sunset?
No, there is no sunset provision in this bill.
Thank you, Mr. President. Will there be Mr. President, I'd like to ask another question, please.
Will the carrier yield?
Happy to, Mr. President.
Carrier will yield.
Will there be a sunset added by another vehicle? Mr. President?
My comments today are devoted strictly to this bill, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President.
I recognize Senator Brewster.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, we are in extraordinary times. Extraordinary times in the state of Oregon. And yet, here we are in June 11th, at the tail end of a legislative session, a session that is, for the most part, done business as usual. And that business as usual is where we have passed budgets that have increased fees, that have grown state agencies, grown their responsibilities, broadened the depth and reach of state government. Business as usual. We haven't looked at this as an extraordinary circumstance. What we are faced with right now with a vote here is an extraordinary vote to increase taxes on businesses, the very businesses that are the backbone of Oregon's economy, in a time when they're, for the most part, struggling to keep the 88% of Oregonians who are currently employed continue to be employed. What we do know clearly is that you passed this tax increase on business, and unemployment in Oregon is going to go up, not down. That's what we know. There's no question about that. Our own legislative staff have confirmed that. We've passed other bills trying to grow private sector employment, and here we go, turn around and pass this one that's just going to whack the same private sector employment. We have an alternative, Mr. President, colleagues. The alternative is to take extraordinary action that's outside of what is normal practice in this legislature, and that is identifying other funds. The Senator from Sherwood, more articulately than I can explain and talk about, the opportunity to do something extraordinarily out of the normal course of legislative, how we generally do business in this state Senate, in this state legislature. We know that there are hundreds of millions of dollars available that we could, through a change in statute, reallocate to maintain critical services in the state of Oregon. There's no question about that. Again, the same legislative staff that are staffing the majority as the majority rolls through these huge tax increases. Not only are we rolling through huge tax increases, at the same time rolling through huge budget cuts, the worst of both worlds, in my opinion, when we could do something extraordinary. And that would be that we would look at the budget as a whole, all funds, those fees that Oregonians pay, Oregon businesses pay, that are sitting in ending fund balances, available for the legislature to use, and not go out and do what we're doing here on the Senate floor today, raising taxes in a recession, probably the deepest recession in a generation, to further harm and hurt Oregon's difficult economy. I urge us not to do business as usual. Let's do something extraordinary. Let's look to the back to basics budget as a way to move the state forward, not raise taxes, fund the critical services necessary in the state of Oregon that all of us care about, including K-12 education, including higher education, including services to seniors and those that are disabled in our state, without having to raise these taxes. And as we had the conversation yesterday as the carrier, not only are we raising taxes, but a certain segment of the population collects 42 cents of gas tax revenue at the state and federal level. They're paying a tax on a tax. How's that fair? How does that make any sense? This is a bad bill. Doesn't make much sense. And I would urge us to do the extraordinary rather than the ordinary. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. I recognize Senator Jeff Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. President. When I arrived at my office this morning, I had a significant volume of emails congratulating the members of the Senate for the tough stand we took yesterday. And that tough stand was to say no to taxes. Received very few emails disappointed in what we've done. In fact, I received none. The frustrating part in all of this is we continue to operate in the same old way we have always operated. I guess President Obama's chief of staff, Rahm Emanuel, said early on that we should take advantage of the crisis, okay? So we are taking advantage of the crisis here in this legislative assembly by continuing to grow government as if everything is fine. I'm reminded when we look back at the recession of 2003 and we came out of it and started looking at state services, what was driving us at that point in time was to get back to the same level in state government that we would have been at if the recession hadn't happened. In the real world, colleagues, when adjustments have to be made, they're made, and they're made in real time, in real circumstances. We continue to operate as if this was fantasy land, and it's not. And it's unfortunate that we do that, because quite simply, it's real people that are paying real bills and paying real taxes to fund what we consider to be vital. Colleagues, what's vital is Oregonians being able to go to work, pay their bills, take care of their families. So for us to be passing measures that are going to cost people their jobs is irresponsible. It absolutely is. You know, the most troubling part of this whole package that we're doing with today is we are going to tax businesses that aren't making a profit. How in the world does that make any sense? To tax a business that doesn't make a profit. At some point in time, we need to wake up to the reality of what the real world is like. This bill and the one following it clearly are not connected to the lives and situations that real Oregonians are facing right now. I cannot support something that's going to cost more Oregonians their jobs. This bill will.
Thank you. Further discussion. Recognize Senator Vicky Walker.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think this back to basics budget is actually a fairy dust budget, and let me tell you why. Some of this is our own making, colleagues, and I've said this before. We do this to ourselves. We do it to ourselves here, and we do it to ourselves at the ballot box. So in 1973 to 1975, business income taxes were 18.5% of all income taxes. Yet this biennium, they are 6.3%. We went way down. Let me tell you, one of the reasons we went way down, and I was here, and I voted no for that. And it's something called single sales factor. Senator Rosenbaum remembers that because we served in the House together. Multi-state corporations make profits in more than one state. We're talking about the big ones like Nike and Intel. They have lots of sales outside of the state of Oregon. Prior to 1991, Oregon used a formula that equally weighted the three factors: property, payroll, and sales. In 1991, Oregon switched to a formula that double-weighted the sales factor. And in 2001, when I was serving in the House, Oregon said, let's phase in a single sales factor formula. And under this formula, only in-state sales relative to all U.S. sales matter in determining how much of a company's profits are apportioned to and thus taxable by Oregon. And then in 2005, we had the foolhardy desire to make this speed up even faster, and we cut short the phase-in process, and we fully phased it in, starting July 1, 2005. Colleagues, do you know how much that cost Oregon? Let me tell you. It cost Oregon $77.6 million in 2005-07. And it was going to cost Oregon $65 million in the last session, and there was the corporate kicker. And we had the good sense to divert that into a rainy day fund. But it's going to go back up because of this single sales factor. So don't talk to me and whine that corporations are going to get hit with a bigger piece of the tax burden, because they are not. In 1931, we said corporations will pay $10, 10 bucks for a corporate minimum tax. Today, it's 2009, and they're still paying 10 bucks. I bet you in 1931, I wasn't born then, but I bet you in 1931 a cup of coffee cost 5 cents. Today, it's well over 4 bucks. I cannot believe that we are still charging corporations 10 bucks. I was on the radio this morning. They were having a very fascinating conversation about what is tax fairness. I said, that's a really interesting question, because tax fairness is always, if you tax the other guy, that's fair. Well, Oregonians are tired of them being the other guy. The people of the state of Oregon are tired of seeing the larger corporations walk away with all the coins in their pocket, and we're picking up the pieces and funding this state budget. Yesterday, when this bill fell, I said, if that's what you want, is for me to go down there and slash these budgets, I can do that. But what I found extremely fascinating is I've had some members of this assembly from the other side of the aisle come to me in the last couple of weeks, say, Senator, do you think you could find some money in the budget for my project? Do you think you could find some money in the budget for this project because it's really important to my district? Well, where am I going to find that money if we don't make up this revenue, colleagues? That's $700 million. And yeah, I've got a vested interest here. My son's a first-year teacher. He's not going to be teaching all day next year. He's going to be teaching a half day down at the middle school because he lost his high school job because they got cut in their budget. So yeah, I have a vested interest in this. I have a vested interest in making sure that all the kids have an opportunity to have their favorite teacher. You know, I sat home last weekend, and the kids in my son's class put together a little workbook, and they said, Mr. Walker, let's save Mr. Walker's job. And they wore T-shirts to class, help save Mr. Walker's job. And they wrote notes in this book. And they were so upset that this young first-year teacher, 31 years of age last week, is going to lose his job because of budget cuts. These kids were so inspired by this teacher and what they've been able to do to make them think and to care about learning. This is what we're doing here, colleagues. It's about fairness. It's about trying to make sure that we provide for the most needy here in Oregon and that we have children who can grow up educated and know how to spell, and know how to read, and know how to think, and know how to write. I got an email yesterday from someone in my district. I hope, as my senator, you do not support this revenue package. And I wrote back and I said, as your senator, you bet I support this revenue package, because I'm helping your neighbors. I'm helping your family be protected from criminals. I'm helping those neighbors who don't have a job and don't have any support system. I've got a mother-in-law on Medicaid. She's in a nursing home. I've got a brother on Medicaid, the Oregon Health Plan, and he doesn't have a job, and he finally got Social Security disability for $837 a month. How's anybody supposed to live on that? He had a health problem that turned into a huge health problem. He didn't expect it. Nobody expects this to happen to them. Nobody expects the economy to tank, and nobody expects their job not to be there tomorrow. And even if my brother didn't have a health problem, he doesn't have a job because the RV industry went belly up. So start thinking about the future here, colleagues, and start thinking about these people who are in your neighborhoods, the neighbor down the street who doesn't have enough food to feed their family. Walk your neighborhood, see who's home, see whose car is in the driveway who normally drives off to work. This is about fairness, colleagues. That's what this is about. And if you think it's anything else, it's fairy dust. I'm sorry. This bill needs to move. Thank you.
Recognize Senator Chris Telfer, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I rise as a certified public accountant and the only one in the entire legislature to mostly correct the obvious misunderstanding of what the corporate minimum tax is. I do this for a living, and I can tell you the corporate minimum tax is a tax on corporations, C corporations, if they have no profit. They have not made any money. So if you raise this to $7,500, they'll have to go borrow the $7,500 to pay this corporate minimum tax. If, in fact, you on your individual tax returns, colleagues, had no taxable income, this would equate to, oh, but we want you to pay a tax anyway. The corporate minimum tax is taxed to a C corporation because they have no taxable income. They have no profit. This is still a tax to them. An S corporation pays the $10 because they don't pay tax. An S corporation passes its profits through to the individual shareholders who pay the tax at their tax bracket, which is higher in most cases than the corporate tax. So just a little bit of clarification that the corporate minimum tax is a tax on corporations because they have no taxable income. Perhaps we ought to consider having 1040s or Form 40s in the state of Oregon pay a tax if you don't have any income. In fact, the IRS will give you money in many cases called the earned income tax credit if you don't have any taxable income. So just wanted to clarify that. There's obviously a misunderstanding of what the corporate minimum tax is and what it means. Thank you, Mr. President.
Recognize Senator Brian Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm tired of getting beat up and my character impugned. Move the previous question.
The previous question. I believe we're under call. All right. Senator Devlin has demanded a call of the Senate. He's joined by Senator Walker and Senator Burdick. The doorkeepers will bar the doors. The Sergeant Arms will attend. The clerk will call the roll.
Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Gerard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Montes-Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Przonski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Berger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, President Courtney.
He's here. Where's Senator Metzger? Here he is. All those subject to the call are present. The question has been called. All those in favor will please say aye. The name of the call. Those opposed, no. The clerk, please call the roll.
Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. Gerard. Haas. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Montes-Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Przonski. Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Berger, Walker, Whitsett, President Courtney, absent, Atkinson, voting no, Bates, Bonamici, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Haas, Johnson, Metzger, Montes-Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Przonski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Verger, Walker, President Courtney.
The motion has failed. We're back to discussing and debating the measure before us. Recognize Senator Frank Morris, please.
Thank you, Mr. President, and thank you, Democrats, for saving me the opportunity to speak. And, thank you. And maybe needlessly, obviously, prolonging the agony of this moment, but I think there are some things I'd like to share. And it comes from the perspective, and I know that there is not one member of this assembly, in either the House or the Senate, that doesn't care about children, that doesn't care about the misfortunate folks that need public assistance, that doesn't care about public safety, that doesn't care about higher education. We all care about that deeply. The division comes from how do you solve the problem that we have today. And the fundamental place that you start, and by way by which we will be judged by the public outside of this building, is how we solve this problem. There has been from day one a rush to taxes in this assembly. And that's not the first step to solving a problem. If we get to the point where you need taxes, I will be there to vote. And I have done that in the past. I am not afraid of voting for taxes. But there are certain things that are precedent that must occur before you go down that road of taxation, increasing taxes. Number one, what do you do in an organization when you're in financial exigency? You look at your costs. You look at your cost basis. How do you reduce the cost basis of that organization? If you're in a car dealership and your sales are down, you figure out how to do it with two people instead of three. In the aggregate business, it's the same way. And that's how the public will judge the performance of this legislature. What have we done to reduce the cost basis without reducing service to the public? The first thing that the public receives is a reduction in service. It is not a reduction in cost. Now let's just pick an example. We all receive PEB in this building, every one of us. How much do we pay for our health insurance? Zero. We pay none. How many states within this great United States offer health insurance without asking for participation in covering that cost? State of Oregon. There's a huge cost issue. And the public outside of this building will look at what we do here today and say, has the Oregon legislature dealt with the issue of cost? Can we answer that question in the affirmative? And we've not done those things. Now, I recognize this is the legislative body and you have the executive branch. We need to be working together on this issue of reducing costs. The way we're reducing costs today is we are taking furloughs. And how is that translated to the public? It's a reduction in service to the public. And when the public does not get the service, they're angry. They are angry. And it builds that cynicism that the public has so deeply held for this body and the things that we do. The second thing that you need to do in a financial exigency is you need to look at all your resources, all the resources that are available to you to solve this problem. Have we done that? Have we looked at all available resources before we have gone down the path of increasing taxes? I don't think we have, Mr. President and colleagues. Let me just give you an example. My good friend and the chair of revenue, we're looking at Betsy. We granted the most excessive tax credits in the history of this nation in the 07 session, to the tune of the expected cost in direct grants from the Oregon Treasury of $150 million in this upcoming session. Now, we've been working in revenue to try to bring that back into balance. Friends, what is more important? Keeping seniors in their home, children in school, higher education supported, and public safety. What's more important, to do that or to build windmills? You've got to look at the priorities, and you've got to look at available resources, all available resources. There's nothing that would prohibit us from suspending. Let the pipeline come up to a point and then suspend for 24 months those Betsy credits for windmills that would generate $75 to $100 million. Of resources that we would have available here to fund those vital services. Have we done that, or will we do that? No, we have not. So in the final analysis, when this is all said and done, what we will have is the public looking at us and saying, have you reduced cost and tried to maintain service? Have you done that? And the second thing is they will look at all of these available resources, and have you utilized those before you have asked for taxes? Colleagues, also, I would just have to share with you, to come to the point we are today and have never had the discussion about meaningful, comprehensive tax reform is a sad day. For some, they believe that this is tax reform. Soak the rich and tax business. Colleagues, that's not tax reform. We have a bill and have had a bill, two of them, in fact, to look at building a meaningful rainy day fund. Colleagues, we had in November of 2007, we passed out $1.12 billion in kicker returns. Now, I know that I'm going to tread on my colleagues' toes on my side of the aisle, but we don't have to keep doing this to ourselves. Of that $1.12 billion, had we saved that, not to grow government, but saved it for times like this? Colleagues, we've failed. We have failed in our job. We have not provided the leadership. We have not come together and found that common ground that said, we are going to build a financial foundation for this state that will survive into the future, and we can manage the volatility. If you don't want to do tax reform, for God's sake, at least save the money for times like this. And we haven't done it. So now we've come to this point in time where we're going to pass these tax increases. There's a better way. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Senator Fred Gerard yielded his time, and previously Senator Roy Montesanderson yielded her time to Senator Walker. Further discussion? Recognize Senator Mark Hass.
I tried, Mr. President, I tried, and you were right. There is just not the political climate in this building at this stage to modify these tax bills even in a small way that I wanted. So it is all or nothing. And knowing that, without these bills, the education budgets that concern me greatly would crash on the rocks, and I would never let that happen. But what there is in this building today that there wasn't yesterday is a number of people who are encouraged by this idea that there is more to tax reform than just raising taxes. And I've been working with them over the last 12 hours to do just that. One critical area of tax reform, as my good friend, the senator from Lynn and Benton counties pointed out, is Oregon's rainy day fund. In the House Revenue Committee today and tomorrow, House Bill 2073 is being amended with language that will make a significant change to the bill that's before us right now. House Bill 2073, after it is amended, will take the incremental increase in the corporate tax rate after the fourth year and dedicate that money into Oregon's Rainy Day Fund. That would be an estimated $70 million per biennium, and it will help the legislature in the next downturn to avoid exactly what we're doing right here at this moment. This is a very significant change because it would be the first ongoing, permanent contribution into Oregon's Rainy Day Fund. I can't tell you how much it means to me to have the Speaker and you, Mr. President, on board with that bill, and I applaud the leadership of the House, especially Representative Tobias Reed. A robust rainy day fund is the second most important improvement we can make to Oregon's tax code. If we had one of those in place today, we wouldn't be talking about these two tax bills. The most important change we can make is to reduce the volatility of our tax code, the most volatile in the country. So, Mr. President, sometimes when everything is so choreographed, produced, and orchestrated, I do believe, as you saw, that it's okay to say, stop the music. It clears the air. It reminds us that we're human. It reminds us what's important. It reminds us that sometimes people who stand up for their principles end up standing in different places. When we're at our best, though, these people find ways to come together. Thank you.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Dave Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. President. When the senator from Albany, West Albany, was talking about windmills, I thought, geez, this is my Don Quixote moment. I could start charging them. But let's look at the facts. You know, we're here arguing about this, and we're all kind of upset. Let's kind of lighten up a little bit. This is a difficult vote. But if you look at really the big picture, the states of Oregon, Washington, and California all rely upon some sort of tax system. All of us have huge deficits. The western states, Alaska, Montana, Wyoming, New Mexico, and you could add in Oklahoma and Texas, don't have the problem we have. And the reason they don't have that problem is some of them use tax issues, but they also have a stream of income, or should I say a river of income, from the use of natural resources. And, you know, I'm a great advocate of we ought to be using more water out of the Columbia River, and I, you know, I'm going to be a no on this vote, but I truly am very thankful that the senator from Albany came up and talked about we have to solve this problem. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion? Senator Burdick, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. President. I can't let this moment go by without heartily endorsing the comments of my good colleague and vice chair from Lynn Benton County. We truly would not be looking at this bill today had we had a proposal in place that is currently pending in this legislature to build up our rainy day fund with part of the kicker, both corporate and personal. In fact, the numbers are just about the same if this had been in place. We would not be standing here or sitting here or whatever we're doing, raising taxes at a time like this. But as you know, colleagues, we are where we are, and we're in the situation that we're in. And as you, most of you know, when I'm not here in the legislature, I am actually a member of the business community in Portland. In fact, I sit on an Oregon Business Association policy committee that takes up issues like this and discusses them very much from a business point of view and a very long-range point of view. So, colleagues, you're not going to hear any rhetoric from me about how business is shirking its responsibility or business is not paying its fair share. You're not going to hear that from me because I sincerely believe that our business community, particularly our small business community, is the economic driver of this state that is going to drive us out of this recession that we're in right now. So I would not be standing here if I felt I were doing something to harm the Oregon business community. Obviously, it would be better to be doing nothing. I don't dispute that. But as we pointed out yesterday, right now, Oregon is 49th out of 50 for the percentage of business taxes relative to gross state product. Everything in this bill, House Bill 3405, that we're doing today, will move us up two spots. So now we will be 47th best business climate in terms of total business taxes relative to gross state product. This is not an unreasonable move to be taking in a very difficult time because, colleagues, when business leaders come to testify in this legislature, more often than they testify about taxes, they are testifying about the importance of education, the importance of infrastructure, the importance of a social safety net to make our communities livable, to make our communities attractive for more businesses and to help business grow. So would I rather not be carrying this bill today? Would I rather be just drawing from a rainy day fund that was well funded? Yes, I would. But this is not an unreasonable measure. This is a balanced measure, and it is critical to save the programs that we need as Oregonians and as members of the business community, and I urge an aye vote.
Call the Senate. Senator Dillon has demanded to call the Senate. He is joined by Senator Alan Bates and Senator Dianne Rosenbaum. Senator, doorkeepers will bar the doors. The Sergeant at Arms will attend. The clerk will please call the roll.
Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Montes-Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Przonski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Ferger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, President Courtney.
He's here.
All present.
All subject to the call are present. The question now rises upon the third reading and the final passage of House Bill 3405. Those who hear the opinion of the bill shall pass to say aye as the names are called. And those opposed, no. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Montes-Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Przonski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Ferger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, President Courtney.
Yes.
Absent, Atkinson, voting no, Boquist, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Cruz, Morse, Nelson, Starr, Telfer, Whitsett, Winters, 18 ayes.
Party is declared passed. Recognize Senator Devlin. Yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate colleagues, I move that House Bill 2649 be taken from the table, and I ask for a call of the Senate.
Senator Devlin has moved that the House Bill 2649 be taken from its place on the table. Senator Devlin has demanded a call of the Senate. He's joined by Senator Lori Montes-Anderson and Senator Jackie Dingfelder. The doorkeepers will bar the doors, and the Sergeant of Arms will attend. The clerk will call the roll.
Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Montes-Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Przonski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Berger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, President Courtney.
He's here. Is he inside the phone booth there? All those subject to the call are now present. This motion is to take House Bill 2649 from the table. All those in favor of the motion will say aye as their names are called. All those opposed, no. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Bates. Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick.
Is it Burdick?
We have to wait.
Move on and we'll come back. I can't move on. We have to wait for just a few seconds here.
Carter.
No, we're voting.
Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. Girard. Haas. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Montes-Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Przonski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Ferger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, Atkinson, President Courtney.
Yes.
Absent, Atkinson, voting no, Boquist, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Cruz, Morse, Starr, Telfer, Whitsett, Winters, 19 ayes.
The motion has carried. House Bill 2649 is now before the Senate for consideration under third readings. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2649, on taxation, prescribing effective date, and providing for revenue raising the required approval by a 3/5 majority.
Recognize Senator Jenny Burdick.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, despite the economic difficulties that we are in today, there are some Oregon families who are actually thriving economically. What House Bill 2649 does is it asks these wealthiest group of Oregon citizens to pay a little more to get us out of this difficult economic time. As you know, the 9% maximum income tax rate that we pay in Oregon sets in at a joint income of $18,000 a year. Therefore, someone who makes $500,000 pays the same tax rate as someone who makes $18,000. House Bill 2649 increases personal income tax rates on higher income households for tax years 2009 through 2011 as follows. It creates a 10.8% tax bracket for joint filers with taxable income between $250,000 and $500,000 a year, or between $125,000 and $250,000 for single filers. For tax years 2012 and later, the rate for this bracket of taxpayers would be reduced down to 9.9%. In other words, 9% above the current maximum rate, 0.9% above the current maximum rate of 9%. House Bill 2649 creates an 11% tax bracket for joint filers with an adjusted gross income above $500,000. For tax years 2012 and later, these taxpayers will also revert to the 9.9% rate. The bill also phases out the federal tax subtraction for joint filers with adjusted gross income above $250,000. In addition, colleagues, this bill does a very important thing for the unemployed Oregonians who are suffering in this economy. It actually adds a tax deduction of up to $2,400 of unemployment compensation, which will be excluded from taxable income for tax year 2009. This tracks the federal deduction for unemployment benefits. This issue was discussed earlier in the session and has been discussed since, and we are doing this in House Bill 2649. On balance, with the addition of the additional tax revenue and the subtraction from the unemployment exemption, this bill will raise a net $472 million for the general fund in 2009-11, and therefore it is a crucial piece of the revenue package we need to fund our programs. This modest increase in the marginal tax rate will affect only the top 2.5% of wage earners in Oregon, the ones that are doing the best even in this difficult economy. And no Oregonian who earns less than $125,000 will be affected at all by this increase. This bill raises the rate on this small number of wealthy Oregonians by only half of 1%. Affecting only the income they earn above the threshold. In other words, for the first $250,000 for a joint filer, the rate will be 9%, just like the rest of us. And the higher rates in this bill apply only for the income above that number. For instance, a household making $400,000 a year will pay an additional $2,555 in taxes. This household makes over $33,000 a month, and their tax bill will amount to just over $200 a month. This modest increase for high-income houses will make a huge difference to education, public safety, and our most vulnerable citizens. It's been said that, and correctly so, that the wealthy Oregonians keep society moving by investing in businesses. And some of the income affected by this tax bill is business income. And that is very true, but these people who pay these taxes also benefit greatly from the investments in education, transportation, health care, and other services. We all talk about how the revenues are important, the programs are important to struggling Oregonians, to children, to seniors, but wealthy Oregonians who own businesses also benefit greatly from the services that are provided by government. They get education for themselves, their children, and their workers. They can attract workers more effectively. The transportation infrastructure is very important to this group of people. Healthcare services to keep their employees on the job. Public safety to keep their businesses and workers safe. Economic research shows pretty conclusively that the key to economic growth is human capital, research, and innovation, which we can support by funding economic development programs and especially education. We're asking those who can afford it in House Bill 2649 to help keep Oregon moving through this difficult time. With the $472 million we will raise from this plan, we'll be able to keep schools open, feed and clothe hungry kids, help seniors stay in their homes, and protect the most vulnerable among us. Colleagues, I urge your aye vote on House Bill 2649.
Recognize Senator Larry George.
Thank you, Mr. President. I feel like I've spoken more on this floor this week than I spoke the entire session. And the difference is that on some of these things are policy and some of them they're personal. And on this bill, it's definitely personal. I own businesses that are LLCs and S corporations. And the only way to explain how this bill got to the floor, the condition it's in, is that the majority party doesn't understand who are our family and small businesses. When you have S corporations, LLCs, and partnerships, you don't pay separate taxes for those companies. All of the revenue that you make in your business flows directly onto your personal income tax. My staff did some research, and between 75 and 80% of these so-called rich Oregonians are actually small and family businesses who their business incomes flows to their personal income tax. For small businesses that are truly trying to grow, this is a devastating blow. So I'm going to give you some simple math. Let's say, for instance, you own an S corporation that is involved in manufacturing. You're an entrepreneur. You want to grow your business. This is a real-life example, folks. So you make $500,000 of income. As the carrier of the bill said, that's a rich Oregonian. You pay, before this bill passes, $200,000 in income taxes. Okay? Because you made, because that money flowed onto your personal. Now understand, the business didn't transfer you $500,000. It's still sitting over in the business. But it flows to your personal income tax. So you pay personally $200,000 of income tax. Then the business, if you're a growing business and investing in capital, you've gone out and borrowed money. And your debt service comes out of your post-tax dollars. So if you have debt service that exceeds $300,000, you've paid $200,000 to the government for taxes, and you've paid $300,000 to the bank, you've got no money, and the majority party wants to raise taxes on those folks. Sure, there are some rich individuals that sit up in Dunthorpe, and they make tons of money, and they inherited a bunch of money, and heck, I think we ought to have an altitude tax. If you live above a certain elevation, you have to tax those folks. But for the rest of us who live down in the real world, the fact is that we are barely making it, regardless of what's showing up on our personal income taxes. Those of us who have businesses. I went over to the House floor, and I watched a House member, actually a young House member, get up and say that since 1990, he has been waiting to cast this vote. And I thought to myself, wow, we have had a very different experience over the last 18 years. My life over the last 18 years has been struggling, working two jobs, cold nights, sleeping on top of bags of hazelnuts, trying to catch 4 hours of sleep before I have to be back at work, not going home, not going to friends' weddings, stressing out whether I'm going to make payroll, living a life that is every day, 18 hours, 7 days a week. People used to make fun of me. And so now, at this moment where I'm borrowing money just to keep my business alive, to try to keep it competitive, we're in food processing. So all these new food safety things that we have to do, we're borrowing money, trying to keep the business alive. I'm trying to keep my employees employed. And then somebody comes up and says, I am proud to cast this vote. I've been waiting 18 years to cast this vote. As I drove into the Capitol, I'm constantly amazed because apparently I'm going to show up as one of these people who deserves to be taxed. And I'm driving in my $1,800 1994 Ford Explorer that has dings in the hood. You can all go down to the basement and take a look at it. And I'm looking at all these people who are saying the rich ought to pay, and they have cars that cost $30,000 and mine's $1,800 because I can't afford a $30,000 car. And yet, somehow, I'm not supposed to take this personally. This tax is about one thing. It's about taxing our entrepreneurs. My younger brother and I are partners in our business, and we're constantly amazed. We talk to older generations, people who are our mentors, and they had colleagues in manufacturing. You know, you talk to people who are in business, they had colleagues that they work with, that they're their peers. My brother and I are constantly amazed at how few young business people are in manufacturing because the opportunities are being squashed. This is an incredibly personal bill to me because I have labored for more than 18 years with my business trying to keep it alive, and people glibly say on this floor that somehow these people ought to pay their fair share. And I don't know if you truly believe that, because I don't think you do. I don't think that that's what's really being said. Or there's a massive misunderstanding about how our tax structure works. It's an incredibly personal bill because of the fact that this is about small business. This bill, 75 to 80% of the people affected by House Bill 2649 are small and family businesses. All of you in the media, I want you to report that. That's the truth. I don't want to see these headlines anymore, but this is about some kind of rich individuals. So you in the media, please report what the truth is. And for those of us who are in business, who are trying to pay our taxes, but then also have to make debt service with post-tax dollars, please understand what you're doing to us. I suppose established businesses that are doing very well, that aren't investing in any new equipment, can afford to pay this. But if you're a small business person investing in the future of this state, and you are borrowing money for new equipment to try to, in my situation, meet new food safety standards and try to make Oregon industries the best they possibly can, and you're investing in equipment and you've got debt service to banks, you are going to bankrupt us. And you could say, oh, it's just a small little tax increase. It's a 20% tax increase in my state income taxes. This isn't a small little tax. This is a huge tax. And it's a huge tax on the very people that we need who are investing in the future of their businesses. It's a very personal tax because I lived the last 18 years. So while the good representative on the other side is proud, has been waiting 18 years to cast this vote, I'm sure that he got government grants to pay for his college education. I'm sure he got government loans to pay for his college education. I didn't. I paid for it out of my own pocket. I struggled through school to try to build my business. I struggled with having one job during the day and another job trying to build that business. I would go to auctions on the weekends trying to buy old pieces of equipment to fit into my plant so I didn't have to go out and borrow for the newest equipment. But you don't understand the struggles of entrepreneurs out there who are trying to make a living and trying to employ Oregonians, and you glibly believe that somehow this isn't about taxing small and family businesses. Now, I've spoken long enough. As you can tell, this one right here, this bill right here is different for me because the majority party cannot understand the tax structure if you're going to pass this bill. There is no way that you actually understand, if you're voting a vote on this bill, there's no way you can actually understand how this applies to small businesses and family businesses in the state, because if you did, you would see that you are attacking the goose that lays the golden egg. The very people that will invest in new equipment, that will hire Oregonians, are the ones you're taxing. That cannot be what you actually intend. And I know that MoveOn.org and all these national groups have this tax the rich, but fine.
but please have written the bill to exclude the money you make from S corporations and LLCs, the small business and the family businesses in the state. Please send this bill back to committee. Please do something not to cut off the economic engine of our state. I urge a no vote. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Senator Dave Nelson yielded his time. I recognize Senator Chris Telford.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Burdick used an example that somebody earning $18,000 a year was paying the same tax rate as somebody in a very large income environment. And Senator Burdick is absolutely right. We in Oregon do not have a progressive tax rate. Somebody making $18,000 pays 9%, so does somebody making $80,000. But instead of increasing taxes on those making $80,000, I would propose that we reduce. Those making $18,000 or less, get off the tax rolls. Have them not pay any tax. They will then have money in their pocket to put food on their table, gas in their car, buy school supplies for their kids. That will spark the economy. Those that are making the $80,000 a year in taxable income then can continue to maintain their businesses, their employees, and not have to cut. That's a progressive tax system. You make less than $18,000 a year, you don't pay any tax. Go ahead, spend it in the economy. Spark the economy. Put food on the table for your family. If you're making $80,000 a year, you're going to pay the same tax you're paying now. And you're not going to have to lay off anybody else. You can keep your business going. Even though it's minimal these days, you can keep it going. I would suggest that we vote no on this bill and we look at real tax reform and say, you make less than $18,000 a year, you don't pay any taxes to the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Fred Gerard.
Thank you, Mr. President. House Bill 2649, better known as the I Hate Small Business Bill, I think one thing can be concluded for sure, 75% of those declaring over $125,000 are small and family-owned businesses. 75% are small and family-owned businesses. Now, as most of you know, I come from a district that has a lot of farms. An individual buys a large tractor, $150,000. Now, he can't expense that out. He has to depreciate it. Now, I'm sorry, when it comes to putting food on the table, he can't eat the tractor. So it's an absolute distortion sometimes as to what the bottom line says and what you actually make. I think it's absolutely absurd to say that there are not other means available to us. It has been brought to our attention that we have over $2 billion, let me repeat that, $2 billion additional dollars than what we had in the last session. $2 billion in all funds budgets. Now, that's a disgrace that we are going to go for more taxes when we have more money. Mr. President, I ask permission to read from printed material.
You want permission to do something?
Yeah.
Please go ahead and feel free to do so.
Oh, thank you. Colleagues, quote, HB 2649 stinks, unquote. Colleagues, the people in my district are rather direct, but that drives the point home. It is not popular with the general public. It is not popular with agriculture. It is not popular with small business. Another thing that came up was, and I think is probably one of the best bylines of all time, and will explain my feelings right now, and that's ABC's Wide World of Sports, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. Colleagues, I know I'm going to lose. I'm going to oppose this bill. But I'm going to sit down and I'm going to know that I'm not putting tens of thousands of people out of work and closing small business. I would encourage a no vote.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Jeff Cruz, please.
Thank you, Mr. President, colleagues. I wasn't going to speak on this bill, but some of the things that were said on the last bill encouraged me in my own mind to stand up one more time. There is a better way, Mr. President. And no matter what people in this chamber or in this building say about the back to basics budget plan, it is real and it will work. It is not voodoo, it is not fiction, it is real numbers. The real question, Mr. President, that I keep asking myself is why are people so reluctant to open the door to other funds' budgets? Why are they so reluctant to even look into agencies that are other fund funded? What is so sacred about other funds that we refuse to look at it? What is it? I'm assuming there's a great deal of FTE that are other fund-funded positions. Maybe that's what we're trying to protect. I don't know. But we do know for a fact that we should be looking there. We do know for a fact that if an agency has reserves that are more than they need for operation, it should be something we consider. And we do know those reserves exist. And we do know they could be obtained. So, Mr. President, why in the world are we imposing taxes on Oregon businesses during a recession when we have cash available inside the structure of state government that could serve the same purpose? This is a bad bill. My good colleague mentioned agriculture. He was a bit wrong. If you're going to buy a 150-horse tractor, it's closer to $200,000. If you're going to buy a combine, it's $250,000 or more, probably $300,000. That's the cost of doing business. You know, what we are doing with this bill is preventing people from growing their businesses. And I've been in business for a long time, and I'll tell you one thing I absolutely know. If your business is standing still, it's failing. You have to be growing your business. Why should we be passing an aggressive tax that is going to keep, that is going to cost people their businesses, going to make them uncompetitive? Long term, this hurts the state of Oregon. I urge a no vote on this bill.
Recognize Senator Brian Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the bill.
To the bill.
And permission to use printed material.
Please do.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I was wrong yesterday. Yesterday wasn't the billion-dollar tax day. Today's the billion-dollar tax day. Yesterday, I was wrong when I said we'll lose 11,000 private sector jobs. Actually, I said we'll lose 11,000 jobs because I've been corrected in some of the other debate and realize that, yes, we'll lose 11,000 private sector jobs, but we'll probably gain 16,000 public sector jobs. So I was wrong. I do want to thank the good carrier of the bill and the chair of the committee for a portion of this bill. And I wish you were voting yes on this portion of the bill, and that is the Federal Reconnect for Unemployment Benefits. And I do thank her for that. We did ask as a caucus to have the director of the Legislative Revenue Office come to our caucus meeting so that we could ask questions and better understand this bill. And then during that discussion, we asked about some of the same questions that were promises on this floor here that relate to these tax bills. And what came out of that is that we still have the worst to come if you're a small business owner. There is still discussion, if not proof, that the Section 179 allowances will be disallowed from the stimulus package. The bonus depreciation will be disallowed from the stimulus package. So when it's said that the personal burden for small businesses will only be a few hundred dollars. That's what I call baloney, fuzzy, and not possible, which are quotes from members of various chambers that have been made directly to me. So let me make some corrections from permitted material. I'm sure we can find a publication that says the state of Oregon ranks 49th. Some kind organization distributed to us this session a booklet that tells us the state and state tax burdens here in Oregon, and the first page says we're ranked 27th, not 49th. And the second page says we're ranked 26th, not 49th. And if I'm not mistaken, we have plenty of media behind us, and their newspapers reported that after these taxes right here are passed, we will then rank number one in the nation. The issue of this bill here, and we look at some of these mixes, and there definitely some of them are taxes, and some of them are subtractions. When you calculate the entire state budget, this bill is part of the entire state budget that was proposed by the governor is $54 billion. Now, we all know that the governor's budget's dead on arrival, but it is still that essential level that we're using the basis. And so it's easy to say that the governor's wish list of $14 billion, which is up 15% from last time around, is the budget. And that's the taxes. But when you're a small business owner and this bill passes, I'm still going to pay the fees that we already passed. Those fees comprise 51% of the state budget and the general fund 27%, almost double. So it's easy to say this bill right here and my total tax burden as a small businessman is going to be marginal, and that's simply not true. Because when I pay the fees that go with this, that is the fee plus the tax is the money I have to make up to keep people employed. Like Senator George, this is personal. When my wife and I got married, we were like most young people. We had done most of the wrong things, and we had all of those debts. In fact, we were $89,000 in debt and owned nothing. Now, when I got married, interesting enough, one of the first things to do is you got to get a better job, and I went and applied for a handful of jobs in the public sector and never got any of them. What happened in the end is we worked 16 hours a day. We borrowed money to pay payroll this month. We took no family vacations. We missed school events to keep employees working. And in a meeting last night, like what happened last session, where I had to move employees out of the state of Oregon to survive, I'm not a sole proprietorship. I'm a subchapter S with stockholders. And we have had to make the decision, because of this legislature, we will cut jobs in the state of Oregon and leave.
Recognize Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm glad the good senator from West Valley recognized that this is the bill the senior senator from Southern Oregon is waiting for, and yet the senior senator is not here today to vote on it. And the reason the senior senator wanted this bill is because we do exempt from taxation the first $2,400 of unemployment compensation. I remember the little effort made the other day to try to pull that bill from committee. This is what I asked for when we disconnected from the federal tax code earlier in the session, and I appreciate my good colleagues in both chambers adding that little piece to the bill. So, senior senator, wherever you are, we are voting on your bill today. Thank you.
To the bill, Mr. President.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I stand in vigorous opposition to House Bill 2649. I'm sure that this really is just a drive for Oregon to become number one. We want to be number one. We want to be number one in the nation. We want to be the highest unemployment state in the union. Number one in the nation in unemployment. I'm sure that's why we're passing this bill. This bill will cause small businesses, as we've heard on the Senate floor, more eloquently again than I could ever hope to speak, about how this will cause small businesses in this state to lay off employees. So this is a drive, Mr. President, to become number one. Not only number one in the highest unemployment rate in the nation, we're second now. It's got a few points to go and we'll be number one. Not only highest number one in unemployment, but number one in the highest personal income tax in the nation. So congratulate ourselves. We pass this bill. We become number one. I'd urge us to vote no. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator, do you wish to close?
Yes, just very briefly, Mr. President. I want to just point out, do we have...
Senator Farioli, do you wish to talk now?
Yes, Mr. President.
Senator Farioli, please.
Mr. President, I just wanted to respond to a characterization of the desires of a member who is not on the floor. And it is germane to the bill, Mr. President. The member that is not on the floor did not want this bill. He did speak to a motion earlier that pertains to issues before the floor today, which was not taxing unemployed people on their unemployment benefits. So I just wanted to make that small distinction that this bill was not the object of our members' interest, that that freeing unemployed people who receive unemployment benefits from the burden of taxation was the objective. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Burdick for the close, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'll try again here. Okay, I just wanted to put a couple of things in perspective here on this package. One is the impact on business. According to our data, this package, 73% of the income affected by this package, it comes from wages or capital gains or interest and dividends. Only 22% of the income comes from business, although 72% of the filers affected by this have some business income. So the income, the business, the impact on business, I believe, has been overstated by some. In terms of our place in the nation, we have an unstable tax system, as my good colleague from Lynn and Benton County points out often, as do I and others. We have a very unstable system because of our heavy, heavy reliance on the income tax. Other states that have an income tax are going to be lower because they have a more balanced tax system. They have other taxes that fill in for their income. So when you talk about our taxes per capita right now, we stand 34th in the nation. After both of these bills that we've talked about this morning go through, our rank will be 31st in the nation. So we are by no means number one in the nation for total taxes, although because of the focus of our tax system on the income tax, that is higher than other states. So this is a balanced proposal. It is an integral part of what we need to protect education and to protect the vital services that we need as Oregonians. We are doing our job here. This is not an easy vote for anyone who's taking this vote today, because votes do have consequences, and either way you vote. But because of the importance of what we are doing here today in terms of education, public safety, health care, and the impact on vulnerable Oregonians, I urge an aye vote on House Bill 2649.
Senator Richard Devlin has demanded a call of Senate. He's joined by Senator Diane Rosenbaum and Senator Joanne Verger. The doorkeepers will bar the doors. The Sergeant of Arms will attend. The clerk, please call the roll.
Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Farioli, George, Girard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Mons Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Przonski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Berger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, President Courtney.
All those subject to the call are present. Question I rise upon 30 and the final passage of House Bill 2649. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass shall answer aye. Names called. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfeather. Ferrioli. George. Gerard. Haas. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Montes Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Brzezinski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Berger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. President Courtney.
Yes.
Absent. Atkinson. Voting no. Boquist. Ferrioli. George. Gerard. Cruz. Morse. Nelson. Starr. Telfer. Whitsett. Winters. 18 ayes.
House Bill 2649, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Senator Ferrioli, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I rise for a vote explanation.
Please file your vote explanation.
Mr. President, I voted no because this bill is a lousy policy for small business, but also because it doesn't contain money to build that new bridge to Washington State. We're going to need it. Thank you, Mr. President.
Recognize Senator Brian Boquist, please.
Vote explanation, Mr. President.
Please file your vote explanation.
Mr. President, I voted no because for 2 months I've been trying to get answers to fuzzy questions, baloney, and everything else. I've had 4 public records requests in, and the day of the vote, I start to get answers from the majority.
We're going to go into recess until 12:40, which means about a half an hour for lunch and come back. We want to take up the health care bills at that time. So we're going to stay in a recess till 12:40 for purposes of your lunch and then come back because we're going to take up the health care bills. The Senate is now in recess at 12:40.